chaps.
Hi.
Yeah.
It's 2024.
Whoa. Release the flamingos. 5,000 flamingos, isn't it? We've released into the wild. We're re-flamingoing.
Yeah. But they are flaming flamingos.
They're flaming flamingos.
Flaming flamingos of Berkshire.
Of Berkshire. So look at them go. Whoa, quite a show. A hell of a show. It's a hell of a way to go for a flamingo.
Henry, hi. You're doing a good job describing that, but I think we need to be more honest with the listeners. It's not, in our world, It's 2023 still. The flamingos are still in a shipping container on their way from China.
They're being dried out so they catch easily. Because it might be wet weather on New Year's Day, and you're it's very embarrassing when the flamingos won't catch when they're
exactly. But when they do catch, they go up like kindling because of those thin legs. Those thin legs are the perfect kindling.
Those thin but, dry legs.
Also, Mike is going to stuff them with fireworks, so they're going to get
homemade gunpowder. Here we go.
And of course, it's how fireworks were originally done. Obviously, is the flaming flamingo. It's gone out of fashion because of ethical concerns, but just. If people are worried ethically, for every flamingo that we sacrifice, you know, for the entertainment of the country, we're planting, aren't we, another three.
Did you sort it out with the council, Henry? That was your... Because obviously we've all had our own little jobs to do with the pageant we're doing on New Year's Day.
And Berkshire Council.
Yeah, Berkshire Council. Obviously it was your job to get the permit.
The thing is...
Because last time they had to close down Berkshire Airport, didn't they? Because
Slough International.
Well, they had to create a Berkshire airport and then shut it down.
Yeah, and then close it down, just to make a point. It was a bit bloody-minded.
It was incredibly... It was a small-minded council official, wasn't it? It went, well, the fact is, no, I'm going to do it, Barbara. I know it's going to involve rerouting a lot of Berkshire's funds away from key Berkshire concerns, which is the Berkshire Wall.
The Berkshire National Opera.
And creating a Berkshire currency.
Yeah, the Berkshire Coliseum.
And, of course, creating the ultimate tourist attraction, which is the Sue Berkshire world.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Which is a...
which is 3/4 mile underground.
That's right.
And which is a reference for those not from the UK to a former tennis star?
Yep.
Well, certainly player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't know, did she win Wimbledon?
She definitely didn't win Wimbledon, but...
Oh. Let's assume that she could have done if she really wanted to.
Okay. I think she could have.
Are you saying, like, the reason she didn't win Wimbledon was because she didn't want it enough? That's a big call.
I don't know. I don't want to do her down. I've got no idea about her tennis record.
I think there comes a point in every great British tennis pro's career where you have to just sort of deal with the devil. Essentially, you're offered two options for your future. Mm-hmm. One is become a genuinely successful tennis megastar, right?
Yeah. Stop eating Kit Kats and curries.
Which means Kit Kat curry night. Yeah. Kit Kat curry night over at Sue Barker's is off. Yeah. That means you're going to win Grand Slams, you're going to win the Miami Masters, you're going to win the Turin Special. The Bogota Big Boys. Yeah.
The Bogota Derby.
The Reykjavik chunky people.
The Belarus big hat. The Weetabix Cup.
And the Tokyo Takedown. Yes, of course.
All those big ones. Right. If you go down that route, you'll get huge sponsorship deals. Yeah. Nestle.
Waterstones. Dunelms, of course.
Of course, Dunelm.
Dunelm. Dunhill.
Clive Dunn.
Clive Dunn. Roy Hodgson.
He sponsors quite a lot of leading sports stars, doesn't he?
He does. That's why he's kept his brand so strong.
Travolta pies.
Travolta savory and sweet pies.
The only problem with that is you have to sign a waiver that there's in the event of a giant Travolta pie taking
causing a gravy leak and flooding a school. Yeah.
In the event of that happening, you have to agree to join John Travolta and his family on a giant pasty that's bound for Mars. <doesn't it? laughs> Yeah. A space pasty. But it'll probably never happen, so a lot of people have to sign that happily.
It was very similar to the end of Greece. Do you remember the end of Greece where him and Sandy get in the car and then they inexplicably just fly into the sky?
Oh, the director's cut. They go all the way to
Mars.
That's
not the director, it's the main cut.
Is that what happens at the end of Greece?
Does it
really? They get in Greece Lightning and then they start driving. Maybe I've imagined this.
I think maybe...
And then they just fly up into the sky. I'm not sure what the suggestion is, really, that they're, they're going to another planet, maybe.
Just trying to cover a lot of bases, maybe.
Just put a sci-fi end on it.
Yeah.
And also, what is that sequel looking like? It's like just the two of them, like, what, are they trying to colonize space? I mean, that's a different world from that summer, from that mad summer they had together. You know what I mean? Two people having to...
It was supposed to be a carefree summer, wasn't it? It wasn't really about intergalactic conquest, was it, necessarily?
Yeah, very different. There's a lot of time to kill.
Mm.
Can you keep grooving for, like, up to 70 years, potentially, to get to Mars? Do you know what I mean? Well, yeah, it just doesn't stand up, does it?
But they'd also, I mean, wouldn't their head just explode as soon as they left the atmosphere?
Oh, is it not covered? It's not even a space car.
No, it's an open-top car, isn't it?
It's just a Cadillac or something, isn't it? Ben, I would love it if you got a bollocking from someone who knew whether or not their heads would explode if they were in an open-top Cadillac as they left the atmosphere. If they knew whether or not your head did explode or if it imploded or if it just rotated 360 degrees or just froze or melted or whatever it is, someone knows.
Something bad happens to it, though. I think we can agree.
I think I know I'm wrong. I think it's a common misconception that your head explodes in space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I've seen a scientist saying that's not true. You definitely die, though.
Yeah, something bad happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's famously no fibre in space, so you'd get very, very, very constipated very quickly, possibly
and
fatally.
And that would kill you eventually. Yeah.
Also, famously, Olivia Newton-John was sewn into those clothes for the end.
That's right.
So
what? What do you mean?
That's why they were so tight. That's
so Olivia Newton-John, in that last scene when she comes out and she's looking smoking hot.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the sort of plain Susan type moment that we've spoken
That's
about
right,
before.
The ultimate plain Susan turnaround.
Exactly.
She's wearing like a sort of patent black leather trousers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she comes out and she says something like, what you doing, stud, or something.
Right.
Yeah.
There's the line. There's
similar
a line.
Delivery. Yep.
Yeah.
Similar delivery.
It's probably... She's almost become over-sexualized. It's a bit like maybe somewhere in between was ideal. Do you know what I mean? Well, this is going to be a lot. This is going to be quite a lot to live with. The constant patent leather, shiny trousers you can see her face in. And constantly referring to you as a stud. You know, eventually you'd want to be able to have the odd game of Scrabble.
Yeah, you can put too much ketchup on the chip, can't you?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can go too far.
Anyway, what I was saying was famously, the costume department had to sew her into that.
I see.
So that she was 100% smooth like a dolphin.
So completely flush.
So there was no zip.
But not sewing into her flesh, Ben.
No. Yeah. But they didn't sew the garments to her.
Onto her. So it's not.
No, I was okay because I was that was much more sinister. That's what I was picturing. What do you mean? What are they sewing?
Well, so you know how you've done up your trousers today by doing up a zip or some buttons.
Yes.
You know when you're gaffer taping your trouser parts together, Henry?
Yeah. So yeah. I gaffer tape it across.
Yeah.
And four staples to the crotch.
Exactly. So it's that.
Yeah.
That's why a lot tighter and snugger and with a team.
Pritt stick my socks on, isn't it? Yeah, that's why it's called Rye Man. It's a manswear. It's a menswear. Essentially, Rye Man is a manswear. It's a manswear shop, isn't it? Yeah. That's where Mike draws on his moustache every day.
Yeah.
Isn't it, with a felt tip from Rye Man? Yeah, no, so go on, Ben. What they sewed that, like, because...
She couldn't take the clothes off if she wanted to. They had to be cut off her.
Right, okay, okay. So
and I'm just saying, like, if you're being blasted into space wearing that and you can't even get them off, it's essentially a wetsuit. And you know what happens inside a wetsuit, Mike?
Mm. Well, we all know how people warm up a wetsuit when they get chilly.
Exactly.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Henry's obviously none the wiser. He's
no idea what you're talking about. But either way, I don't think it ended well for either of them in space.
No.
But whether or not is that linked to Travolta's space sort of orientated thinking, do you think?
Oh, they were going to meet the Thetans or whatever. Yeah.
Mm.
Anyway, how did we get onto that? We were trying to explain who Sue Barker was, and you were saying there's two routes to being a British tennis star.
We'll come back to that, but just quickly. Have you ever seen the film
Three Bean Salad in 2024? More coherent than ever.
Have you ever seen that film Operation Space, whatever it's called? The one that
the mega stinker.
The Travolta.
Is it called The Ice Planet?
Is that where he's dressed up as a Klingon? That one.
Yes.
Yes.
So I've seen it's called Operation Mars Space or something really basic
yeah,
and bad.
Yeah. As a, yeah, whatever it is, it's a clearly a placeholder title that has
Battleship Greece.
There ain't no summer nights in space. What's it called again? It's called Battleship Earth.
Battleship Earth, that's right.
Yes. Have you not seen it?
No, isn't it basically a sort of big Scientology allegory type thing?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I saw that film once.
Worth a watch?
No, it was incredibly bad. It's a film where they've done the thing which, when you're suffering from a budget problem, especially in a sci-fi, the last thing you can do to try and add some sort of excitement to a film, to a scene, is basically put the camera on an angle.
Oh, okay.
Right. You know, it's something they use it. You know, like history documentaries where they've got a reenactment scene. Yeah. If anything's a bit pony and a bit cheap, you just put the camera on an angle. It's just the audience
slightly twist it, sort of Dutch tilty type. Do you mean like sort of off the horizontal?
Yeah, you put a slight Dutch tilt on it. So if you've got like, you know, Guy Fawkes, whatever, having a tense planning scene with his cabal of people,
with his cabal of evil terrorists.
Evil.
let's not put any gloss on these people.
Let's not put any gloss on it. Evil terrorists. Yeah. He put the camera on an angle and it just sort of helps a bit.
Mm-hmm. Papist heretics. you've set me off.
Sorry, no, I shouldn't have. It's a sore point, isn't it, for you still?
Fucking Robert Catesby.
He got away lightly, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just shot dead, wasn't he?
I think they all died, didn't they? I don't know if they got off lightly.
They work Guy over, I think, pretty hard.
I remember at school being shown, really quite macabre now I come to think of it, we were shown Guy Fawkes' signature before and after torture.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
It's not wiggly enough, is it, for you, Ben, the second one?
I mean, to be honest, after the torture, I think I probably wouldn't sign it. Is what
you wouldn't be in the mood for autographs.
No.
Oh, not now, mate. Come on.
Can I say, I know you don't have any bowels anymore, but I'm a big admirer of your work. It would mean so much.
I haven't got the technology for selfies. I'd really just wondered if you wouldn't mind autographing this.
Also, this would be a horribly gruesome selfie. It's a good thing that it makes audio for selfies.
And also, if you wouldn't mind just these calendars as well. Thanks. And, yeah.
Like it's sort of merch-wise. Can I take a see a piece of your ass has fallen off? Do you mind if I take a piece?
Would you mind signing your own ass? It's very unusual people sign their own ass.
You don't need it anymore, do you? It's just been sort of shaved off.
Please sign your own ass shard, please.
Just sign the ass shard. So, Sue Barker.
Sue Barker.
As a British tennis, rising star of tennis in Britain, you're offered a choice.
If that's what she was, yes, go on.
Which I think is what she was. I think she was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're offered a choice.
I get her confused with the equestrian.
Who's that? Princess Anne.
Princess Anne, yeah.
No, Claire Balding.
Yes. But Claire I don't Balding. Really watch any sport, so I don't think I can identify any of these people very easily.
They'll have bumped prawns at the same buffets a few times.
Sorry. That's no.
I genuinely didn't.
I know you didn't mean that to sound salacious, but it.
Welcome to 2024. It's a new idiom for you to try and propagate. And we can see, go out there, go forth, use it, please. And if you could then canvas people, use it upon to see what they think that the prawn is.
Oh, God.
No. What I'm saying is the lines of work they're in, they've both quite often been at the same cold buffet. Going, oh, is it just, I think these are just M&S sausage rolls. They've just taken them out of the pack and put them in a plate. Still, good to be here. Do you know what I mean? They've had those chats at sort of BBC events and stuff quite a few times. They're in the same sort of universe, aren't they?
Yeah, they're in the Gary Lineker zone.
They're in the Gary Lineker zone.
Right.
Either of them could easily pop up in Springwatch, either as a presenter or as someone that's burrowing a hole and being studied over the course of an autumn. Solid British celebs.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so as a tennis star, as a rising British tennis star, you're offered a choice, which is either win proper stuff,
mm-hmm.
or the trouble with that is you don't get to do what the other option is, which is present Question of Sport, be a regular on Gardener's World.
Yeah.
do you know what I mean? Like become a sort of mainstay of British telly.
Become a sort of comfy pair of slippers that the UK public pair of slippers. Can
open a garden fate in the home counties.
Open a garden fate in the home counties. And this is all stuff that Henman does.
Yeah.
Barker does.
Andrew Castle.
Andrew Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Timpson.
Perhaps establish an academy for the children of pushy parents, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And the thing is, you don't get to do that if you're a winner, because you don't get that comfy slippers feeling. Can you imagine Djokovic presenting Springwatch? Do you think he'd be like, these vaults are not good enough. They're not winners. Come on, make it work for you, Vol. Come on, it's a privilege to be a Vol. Come on, make it work.
Who vaccinated these voles? You've ruined them.
Look at this field full of dead rabbits. That's because they weren't vaccinated for myxomatosis, because I don't agree with it.
Similarly, Federer, too classy and too smooth to appear on Question of Sport. It would feel like watching a sort of prize racehorse be ushered onto a donkey field.
What, do the Blackpool beach shift?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be right.
Exactly.
And that's Federer on Question of Sport.
It's true, though, isn't it? Like, if Henman had actually won Wimbledon... Because think about... Who's the Spanish one? What's he called again? Rafael Nadal.
Nadal.
Mm. You see, it's that killer instinct, which means you're not a comfy slippers person.
Right. Yeah.
So that is a trade-off, isn't it, in your life? Because actually, maybe Djokovic watches Springwatch or will spend his retirement watching Springwatch, wishing he could be part of that. But he never can be. He can't be. He's got too many trophies. You can't do both. You can't cross that stream.
I was thinking about this the other day because I was watching a very, very cozy BBC Two TV show about novels. And it's called something like Between the Covers.
Or... yeah, with Tim Henman.
With Tim Henman. And it's very comfy. It's very pair of slippers.
And do they also do it between the covers of... a bed, which is also in between two covers band, one of whom is playing, Taylor Swift was playing Maiden at the same time. Because you've got to run with that kind of hook.
You've got to go with the covers.
It also takes place between two shifts in a restaurant.
Right, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Between the covers. Yeah. And also, all of them are undercover as Mexican drug cartel, aren't they? Which adds a lot of jeopardy to the whole thing as well.
I think it's presented by Sarah Cox, who I like a lot.
Yeah.
As a BBC personality, I think she's brilliant.
But also never won Wimbledon, did she?
Exactly.
There's a pattern.
This is really strengthening your argument, Henry.
But on there was former Spice Girl, Jerry Halliwell, now Jerry Horner, I think.
Okay.
Former Ginger Spice.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking she had a choice to make in life. She could either be an aloof multi-billionaire or multi-millionaire pop star who never appears on anything.
Let's say billion for the Spice Girl fans out there. Let's assume that they're...
It's not billion.
It's not billionaire.
But do you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't get Bruce Springsteen on that. So, again, you have a choice as a musician. Mm. Do you be an aloof star who is a bit of an enigma and everyone thinks is brilliant? Or do you just give in and go on, Bake Off?
Is this the kind of, that guy from Queen sort of question, isn't it?
Roger Deakin.
I'm just going to Google that guy from Queen. Well, the one who went on Sky at Night.
Brian May.
Brian May.
Yeah, because he's kind of, he's not stayed as a kind of aloof pop star, has he?
Maybe, although there's genuine, like, there's a bit of reinvention there. Or not reinvention, but he really, really wants the world to know that he's really into this stuff and good at it, right?
Yeah.
He wants to present himself as maybe not a polymath, but at least a bimath.
Mm.
Do you know that he's really into 3D pictures?
What do you mean, like magic eye stuff?
There's some kind of Victorian thing called like a something a trope. And it's basically a pair of glasses you put on and then you put these little, you look at some kind of slides and they look slightly 3D.
This is too much money though, isn't it?
This is why I've decided I favour the becoming a recluse option.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because they just become, just like everyone else, isn't it? You just become a really boring old bloke who's into something like Victorian 3D pictures. You know what I mean? Like, they all end up with it's a hobby. You just end up with a hobby, which is fine. Yeah. We all get older and we should all probably become fascinated by Victorian automated accordions or something.
Well, everyone needs the hobby, right? You get to age and you're a sort of fatty old provincial middle-aged man or late middle-aged. You need the thing. Like, you get bored, you need dementia prevention, all that kind of stuff. But for most people, there are limited options, right? Because you look on your local community centre and it's a varnishing club or it's Spanish conversation.
Yeah, Spanish varnishing.
You can start learning the ukulele. That's it. There are limited options.
Ukulele varnishing.
Brian May, there are all of the options.
And of course, Art Garfunkel has funneled millions into making the world's biggest courgette.
That's right.
Just because he can.
Yeah. And he can afford the team. He can afford the geneticists and the horticulturists to make it happen.
The first courgette to have inside it, a bit like the, you know, the city of Petra that's carved into the rock, isn't it, to have an entire community carved out of courgette,
right,
within that courgette, isn't it?
Yeah.
Garfunkeltopia. A world, a sort of parallel universe where
Paul Simon never existed. But tell you what, never say to Art Garfunkel, mate, that's a marrow. He absolutely loses it.
Ooh. Yeah.
No, it's a huge courgette. It's the biggest courgette in the world.
It's a courgette or a zucchini or whatever we call it in America.
Or is that a cucumber? I'm not sure.
But either way, it's massive. No, I haven't seen it yet. It's being built in China, but I'm pretty sure. I've got a heap of emails right here telling me.
Look, sponsored. Like, what's wrong with you? Sponsor Panda? Sure, I sponsored a massive courgette. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, they sent me a photo. I know it looks like a normal courgette, but it's to scale, so it will look like a normal courgette. I assume they've built a giant hand holding it. I assume, yes. I didn't ask for the giant hand. I think they threw it in for free.
I can see it with my own bright eyes, burning like fire.
I'll give you a bridge over troubled water. I'll give you troubled water in your face, my urine. I'm going to piss on your face as you get out of here right now.
Dear me.
Yeah.
Okay, let's turn on the bean machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Ali from the Bricklayers Guild of Bremen.
Nice.
Is architecture.
Architecture? Pretty high end, isn't it?
And Ali also writes, I have been involved in the construction of two buildings.
What?
By Dr. Pompidou himself, Richard Rogers.
Really?
Yeah.
Blimey. As far as I can tell, modern architecture, here we go, it generally seems to be that the home you end up living in has like these huge windows that go all the way from the ground to the ceiling.
Mm.
It's like glass. I just feel like any of the major horror threats, you know, the guy from
Plague of Bats,
loads of bats,
mm-hmm. a possessed deer,
mm-hmm. a possessed deer, a scarecrow that's teamed up with an evil teenager, stuck it in a shopping trolley mm-hmm. and is wheeling it around.
Rabies.
Is your point that you'll be able to see all of these things from the window?
You can see all of these things from the window. Freddy Krueger, well, he goes in through your dream, so that's nothing you can really do about that. But
Flu.
Baloo?
Flu.
Who's flu?
Just the disease.
And flu, yeah, flu.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
flu's a bad thing. And the guy who wears the hockey mask from Friday the 13th?
Oh, yeah.
Jason?
It's got the worst name of any horror character.
Jason.
Pinhead?
Pinhead.
Pinhead's a good one.
From the Hellraiser movies, Pinhead. The alien from the Alien films.
Yeah.
If that was in your garden, it's all you can see is that it's right there. Do you know what I mean? In terms of like...
the alien from the Alien films, but dressed up as the clown from It.
And balloons.
Yeah.
Covered in slime. Slimy alien balloons that it's...
On his way to a fancy dress party, but he's got the wrong address, so he's absolutely furious.
Yeah, yeah. And he's worrying about fitting in anyway, because he does struggle to mingle at parties.
He does have a bad reputation. Yeah.
And especially when he gets to the buffet and he has to get the mini weird little mouth.
Yeah, his tiny mini mouth eating all the cocktail sausages. Yeah. Make him do it quick.
The one that comes out and then retracts back in.
So sorry. It's really made a difference. It really makes a difference that you've warmed up these sausage rolls in the oven. I have brushed my teeth, but it's actually very hard to get fresh breath with my mini mouth. It's not my breath. Well, it is my breath, but it's the mini breath. You understand it? It retracts when I try and brush my teeth. It retracts all the way back to the back of my throat, and then I try and brush it to make myself sick, and it actually makes the problem.
And then I'm puking acid, and I puke acid, and then I'm puking acid onto my own mini mouth. I love these mini pasties, by the way.
Yeah.
I love what you've done with the dining room.
But I should let you know, I've birthed some pew pie on your landing. and you know, his shoes off, but I didn't know what the rule was about pupae, so I'm terribly sorry about the pupae. But I have taken my shoes off.
Also, just to be safe, I've removed all the feet from your guests. It's a mini mouth. What I like to say is I use it for small talk. I was told to say that as a line, it would break the ice a bit.
That sort of thing.
Why did you have to invite the alien, darling?
Well, he's really struggling to integrate, isn't he, anyone?
I know that he's
lonely. Got to extend the hand of friendship.
I know that he doesn't have anyone at Christmas and he's lonely, but I mean, we're supposed to enjoy these things as well. I spent half the night killing those crab-like, those fleshy crab-like things with the long tails that that keep birthing eggs with in our guests.
Look, darling, I think of myself as a liberal, and I think a lot of the stuff about immigration is whipped up by the press, but I do wish that alien would fuck off back to space. Sorry, I don't like saying it.
I don't mean that. I don't mean that. I'm sorry. I can't believe I said that. Okay. No, you're right.
Just sometimes I just wonder if there was a knock at the door and it happened to be one of those predator aliens, then I would be a little bit relieved. And it's an awful thing to say, but I'd rather see them fight it out to the death, frankly, in the woods.
I've checked, it's not in the Radio Times this year, but I would love to actually see the real alien versus predator happening in our lounge right now. I'm saying it, I've said it.
But not on our new rug.
He has to make an effort too. He wouldn't play Bananagrams, would he? He has to make an effort too. It goes both ways.
You know what? I'm tempted to just hit the airlock. I'm hitting the airlock, darling. I'm hitting the airlock.
And that is the problem with floor-to-ceiling windows, yeah.
Okay, maybe it's time to have a conversation, which is, let's face it, what we're really trying to talk about here. We've been pussyfooting around it. Let's talk about our fantasy dream homes.
Okay.
What would your fantasy dream home be?
Okay, have you ever seen Trump Tower?
Well, that's the outside toilet for Benjamin.
The Bonjamin skyscraper.
For the Bonjinator.
I'd quite like that, to be honest, if we're talking dreams.
No, sort of Midas touch type thing. Gold everywhere.
Massive gold tower, live in the penthouse.
Gold suit, gold pajamas to wear.
Gold escalator. It's quite 80s, isn't it, in my mind, Trump Tower? Lots of jacuzzis, which is quite an 80s idea.
Mm. I have been inside Trump Tower.
Have you? When were you in Trump Tower?
You can go in. There's shops
in
the bottom.
Yeah.
And there's like a McDonald's, okay. I think, and a Trump Grill. And there was a little stall selling Trump ties.
Okay.
Do you remember Trump used to wear those big red ties all the time?
Yeah.
You could buy one in there. This was pre him being the president. Mm-hmm.
You know what some really rich people do, in my mind, is they have a personal shop that's theirs, of a high street brand.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Would you have one? What would you have?
That's Streisand, isn't it?
Is it Streisand? What's she got? Is this something you hear about?
Streisand's got a whole street of shops that she staffs, okay, so she can go
there
shopping,
go. Brilliant.
In her house.
That's crazy.
Really? Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah.
That sort of modern sort of Marie Antoinette kind of vibes, like a Folly Farm.
Yeah.
And is it all retail shops version that she goes to, or is it like a bookie's she never goes to, like a real high street?
Well, people
have to work in there all day to create the real high street atmosphere.
What's your perfect dream home then, Henry?
Well, obviously, you two, it's going to be something huge and vulgar. Mike, I imagine, is a huge sort of like glass sort of version of your face.
But with swan wings.
With swan wings, and you get around, everything's like canal based, so inside it's all water, you swim from room to room.
It's uncanny, I don't know how you work.
There's something really over the top, and it's
big fajita restaurant?
Yeah, Fajita Joe's.
Yeah, swim up Fajita Joe's.
And you can have a fajita served to you by Joe
Biden?
Joe Biden. Isn't it such a power move by Mike? The president of the United States is rolling up slow-cooked pork into a little fajita for you and asking you if you want
the chipotle
extra guac. And he has to say guac. You don't let him say guacamole.
You want some guac with that? It's 70p extra.
And his cap's too tight as well. I don't know where.
His cap's way too tight, the poor guy.
Sitting on the top of his head, he looks ridiculous.
His cap is so tight. He's gone bright red.
And you say, what's horchata? And he says,
you ask me that every day.
I answer this question every day. Please let me die.
No, Joe Biden. As part of my dream home involves the technology to keep Joe Biden alive indefinitely.
This is my dream. I have a right to pursue my dream, Joe Biden.
So, Mike, what is your dream home?
Well, I think we've got it there pretty
well. Yeah, you've got it nailed it down. What about you, Henry? You said you already knew yours.
Yeah, what's yours, Henry?
Well, no, I was going to say that Mike's obviously giving something big and brash like that.
Yeah.
And I knew yours would be as well, Ben.
Horribly tasteless.
You want to live in Trump Tower. An absolute dick-swinging power move.
But hang on, there's a big... Yeah. There's a,
but it's the ultimate loft extension for Ben, isn't it? He gets a penthouse extension on top of Trump's penthouse, on top of Trump's tower.
But I've got a big butt.
That's right.
And yeah. I cannot lie. So my butt for this is I want to live in Trump Tower, but I want to put it in the middle of the savannah.
Ooh. Oh.
Which savannah?
Big old viewing gallery.
Yeah, big old... So I'm surrounded by sort of zebras and giraffes and stuff, but I'm 50
That's
floors
quite
up.
Good.
Picking them off.
That's quite
with
good.
With an though. Elephant gun.
Of course, suddenly changing the architectural landscape, there's a reason there are regulations, this kind of thing like that, means you'll be blocking vulture routes. Mm-hmm. The vultures won't be able to travel around in the same way. They won't be picking off the dead meat. That means the dead meat, the carrion, lies free.
The worms get bigger and bigger because they...
the worms get...
worms they're eating more carrion massive. Than they should be eating.
Their offspring are even bigger. The worms are now big enough to eat lions.
The worms are now big enough to eat and breed with lions.
And bear in mind, all the time I'm just watching this happening from the 60th floor going...
over the course of a few weeks.
Excellent. And you're just watching going, writhe, writhe, my pretties. So you'll turn that once flourishing, beautiful, diverse ecosystem into a wriggling, necronetropolis of worms.
Of maned worms.
Won't you? Of maned worms. So you'll reap what you sow. So Ben, I think eventually you'll actually become... a kind of disturbing figure because you
thanks for saying become, by the way.
And I weighed up the become and I plumped for it in the end, but I did weigh it up briefly. Just staring out over a kind of an empire of what? An empire of...
Of worms.
Of grotesque sort of fanged worms. Mm. Mike, on the other hand, will eventually end up ill because the fact is Joe Biden... has not qualified, does not know how to run a hygienic fajita kitchen.
Yeah, it's not slow roasted pork, it's undercooked if anything.
It's undercooked.
So getting a lot of porcine parasites building up over the years.
Hang on, does this end up in a similar situation where it's this massive fanged worm?
Mike has worms crawling out of him.
Feeding on me, feeding on Joe Biden and his entourage.
Because he lives in this huge glass thing full of water. That's a perfect ecosystem for
mega worms.
Huge worms to mega worms to evolve super rapidly.
Yeah.
Also, Joe Biden's been kept alive. So as much as they ate Joe Biden, he's still alive and he replenishes.
He's still alive.
It's an absolute horror show of an ending for Joe Biden being slowly, relentlessly eaten to a death that cannot come by increasingly large worms.
But people are saying that this is made for actually probably one of the top three episodes of Springwatch of all time.
So you're probably going to need something worm-proof, it sounds like, Henry. Well,
so my first conversation with Kevin MacLeod is going to be about worm-proofing. We need to talk about worm-proofing. And he's like, so do you want to convert a mill or do you want to convert a mine? No, I don't care about that.
Couldn't give a flying fuck, Kevin. Are you listening?
I couldn't give a fuck.
We need to be ready for the massive worms. There are massive worms in Devonshire. There are massive worms on the savannah.
Have you got any idea what my life is looking like in 5 years' time if I'm not worm-proofed? So I want to talk about worm-proofing manufacturers. I want to talk about worm-proof fences. I want to talk about...
Skirting boards.
I want to talk about handheld anti-worm ordnance. Yeah, I want to talk about special guns that have lasers which can detect worms and blow them up before they've even come in within the second or third of the 10 anti-worm perimeters that I'm going to live within.
We're going to need at least 100 decoy toilets so that it probably doesn't come up my toilet when I'm on it.
I have to have so many toilets. It's just a maths
and
game.
I can't use any of them. I'm just, we're going to need to, some sort of sewer space guy. I'm just going to be shitting into special bags, okay, until I'm dead.
But not in a way that I could throw it and feed the worm.
We're going to need the first upwards toilet, okay? So take everything you know about plumbing and gravity and turn it on its head, because that's what we're going
to
need.
We're going to have to go straight through to the stratosphere and then up beyond orbit, okay? We're going to have to Travolta these turds. Do you understand? Are you listening?
So 6 months ago, I had a conversation with Henry about creating the first ever worm-proof mega toilet. Let's see how he's getting on.
Oh, God, he's covered in worms! Oh, no, worms everywhere! Oh, God, there's a replacement Kevin MacLeod worm. There's a worm wearing a suit and trainers. Ah!
Wormyverse is upon us. Yeah.
I see this as a kind of medieval morality tale, which is both of you fell for at least six of the seven deadly sins with your plan. <didn't you? laughs> Avarice in just wanting everything to be gold and shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Greed in wanting to have fajitas round the clock served up by a serving president of the United States.
Yeah. And serving. He's now serving president.
Yeah. Sloth is in there from the get-go, right? Bobbing about, not thinking through anything, bobbing about on waterborne canals, getting fed fajitas.
What are the other ones?
Broth.
Yeah, broth. Both of you are eating.
And of course, let's not forget lust.
The worms are a metaphor.
So in my one, you see, so you both end up getting punished in a sort of, you know, Hieronymus Bosch-esque worm nightmare.
Yeah.
Which is your just desserts. Whereas this is my dream home. Mm-hmm. My dream home is actually, you know what? Wherever my friends are.
your friends are dead. They've been consumed by giant worms.
Which means it's where the giant worms are, which means I'm now friends with the worms. The worms are eating me. No, I was going to say, my dream home is actually a nice, quite a humble, vintage London property with nice brickwork, nice little garden. But the main thing is near a good bookshop.
Oh God!
I don't need a huge glass helipad like Ben insists on.
And yes, every helicopter smashed through that helipad every time it tried to land.
Helicopter pilots are increasingly unwilling to pick Benjamin up for his hunting sprees.
For little trips, because you like to be dropped amongst the worms, don't you, in your worm cage.
Just for a moment.
And look at them writhing up close.
Mm-hmm.
Look at them, my pretties, look at them.
Writhe.
Whereas all I want, actually, I don't need a glass helicopter, I just need a good old-fashioned railing that I can attach my bicycle to. Because I'll have a walk to the bookshop every now and then, and once in a while, I'll bicycle my way down to the National Portrait Gallery. And you know what I'll do, for me as a luxury, actually sit in front of a portrait of Prince Charles of our king
for seven hours.
But hang on, what's happened? Every painting in this portrait gallery is now of a massive worm. What?
Although in Prince Charles's case, a massive worm wearing a lovely tailored suit
with horribly distended hands.
Are those sausage fingers? More like worm fingers.
Time for your emails.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your hoof.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, time to read your emails. If you'd like to email us, you can do so at 3beansaladpod@gmail.com.
Yes,
a reminder that 3beansalad@gmail.com doesn't go to us. Somebody contacted me on Twitter this week saying we hadn't responded to his email. and he hadn't sent it to us.
Who'd he send it to, sorry?
threebeansalad@gmail.com.
What are we? Threebeansaladpod.
We're threebeansaladpod.
Yes. We're not actually a salad. That's the important thing to...
But I do wonder, like, whoever owns Three Bean Salad is probably getting a fair number of emails, I imagine, about various things they do not understand.
I'm trying to run a bean business and people keep asking me, people are getting angry with me about facts to do with asteroids.
Exactly.
I'm not cut out for this business, Marjorie. I'm closing down Three Bean Salad. That could happen, couldn't it?
Yeah. Okay, let's start with the aftermath of last week's bollocking.
The double bollock.
The double bollock. I was bollocked because I said that Jeff Capes was dead.
Oh, yes.
And he is alive. So that I'm sort of accepting that bollock. Yeah. But Mike was bollocked for describing him as a wrestler. Mm-hmm. Patrick emails with what he describes as a Jeff Capes counter-bollocking.
Ooh.
So that means we've reached a state of what we thought was bollock stasis, haven't we? A bollock had been given and accepted, but he's actually a giant bollock is rupturing the very ground underneath our feet. Here. It's not over, is what he's saying.
Patrick writes, Dear Beans, as perhaps the only listener to Three Bean Salad to have written a book detailing the history of professional wrestling.
Yes.
Very strong start. Yeah.
I wish to offer a counter bollock to the listener bollocking directed at Mike for suggesting that Jeff Capes was not a wrestler. Mm. Although most prominently known as a strongman, shot putter, and prolific budgerigar breeder, Jeff Capes did in fact compete in at least one wrestling match in 1987 against the Dutch wrestler and judoka Chris Dolman.
Judoka? What's that? Is that a kind of version of, is that somewhere between Sudoku and Judo? Judoku. You have to turn your opponent into the shape of a number.
Nine times.
Nine times.
Each one unique.
So that this is an interesting move. So this is a bollock to bollock, just for people to understand. This is a bollock to bollock. It's a kind of bollock shield.
I don't know if it's the full shield. It feels more like a sort of bollock amelioration, really.
Are you saying it's kind of post-bollock salve?
I think even at the time I can remember accepting the bollock, but also feeling that Jeff Capes probably knew his way around a wrestling ring.
Yes.
But Mike, were you specifically referring to that one bout in 1987?
You were, weren't you, Mike? Mike,
I would have been, of course, because that would have been a pivotal event. Me growing up, you know, me understanding what is a man, how to be,
how will I be when I grow up?
As I transition from boy to man? What does that mean?
Yeah,
and that's what my parents sort of sat me down to have
military moustache as wide as possible. You knew that,
yeah. That was obvious from the get-go, yeah.
But you needed to combine that with something else, an activity, wrestling. Yeah.
Well, let's just put a pin in that bollock for a moment, because we've also had another email from Rob. Rob titles the email, Jeff Capes Bollocking in Defence of Mike.
Mm. Okay.
And this is a different line of defence for you, Mike, if you really want to pull out of this bollock.
Well, the bollock cavalry really are charging in here, aren't they?
Yeah.
I wanted to send in a technicality in defence of Mike. If he wanted to issue a retrospective reflecto bollock on the subject of Jeff Capes.
I don't think it's ever been done before, which is an exciting idea, but carry on. Yeah.
Whilst the hirsute beefcake was undoubtedly a strong man, a key element of World's Strongest Man competitions at the time was arm wrestling.
But enough about Mike. What about Jeff Capes? Because that was not the character we're supposed to be talking about. Hi. I come in too late with that.
Yeah.
That was supposed to follow on the thing about the hairy beefcake.
Wait, and we could manipulate that in the edit, but I don't think we'll bother.
No, we probably won't, won't we?
He writes, to me, that qualifies Jeff Capes as a wrestler of sorts and means that the bollocking was wrongly accepted. There is also some particularly gruesome footage of the bone being ripped from his arm during arm wrestling match, which I haven't included. But it seems unfair to deny someone the title wrestler when they are willing to suffer for their
art in this
way.
The bone being ripped from his arm?
Jeez.
Did you say? Is that what you said?
That's what he says.
It doesn't sound right at all.
That surely didn't happen.
Well, I think, isn't it the origin of arm wrestling is that you're trying to wrestle the arm from the man? So is he saying that arm wrestling is a form of wrestling? Well, yeah, I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's suggesting that Jeff Capes got fully kind of cartoon chicken drumsticked in the middle of an arm wrestling match.
Oh.
Okay, well, I appreciate the support. I do, but I think it would be disingenuous of me to try and do a retrospective.
Well, is it even possible, reflecto? Mike? I think that's what we need to decide.
Well, it's not in the statute, but I mean, this would have to go all the way to the Supreme Court, wouldn't it? I think. I don't think this is strong enough to really test that. yet. Plus, I think I accepted the bollocking in good faith. I appreciate the support that's out there. But I think we all know that Jeff Capes, I mean, I was wrong. He wouldn't have defined himself as a wrestler. He'd have defined himself as a keeper of budgerigars.
He's still alive,
Mike.
Right? He's still alive, remember?
Okay.
Yeah.
Careful.
So, yeah, he doesn't define himself as a wrestler, we're saying.
No, he does define himself as a formerly very strong man.
What I'm going to let you know, though, Mike, is that you could, whilst having accepted that bollock last week, you could issue a bollock back, a counter bollock, to Lee, who originally bollocked you, for bollocking you.
The multiverse theory of bollocking, whereby Mike can both accept and reject a bollock simultaneously in two different universes.
Well, he has accepted the bollock, so he could now bollock Lee. It's like counter-suing someone.
I don't think I need to go as strongly as bollock Lee, but I know that Lee's maybe learnt the most valuable lesson of all. It's easy to toss a bollock around, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah.
Before you point out the bollock in someone else's eye, why don't you...
Look to your own bollocks.
Look to your own bollocks. Keep your own bollocks in check, mate.
Mm.
Yeah.
Let he who is without sin cast the first bollock.
Yeah.
Very good. We had an email from Mike, Mikey, who emailed us, I think it was last week or the week before, about his experience with Bolivian dictator Hugo Banza.
Oh, yeah. That was great. I enjoyed that. Is he back, is he?
And at the time, we put out a call to anyone else who is there to give their own... Rashomon like retelling
of other accounts,
of,
didn't we? Location,
we wanted other accounts,
context,
and we did put a call out to maybe if Hugo Banza was listening, he could say what he remembers about Mikey Q jumping him.
Mm-hmm.
So he writes, "Dear Beans, unfortunately, Hugo Banza died about a year after the Q jump incident.
You don't get over that, do you?
I mean, unfortunately, he's doing a lot of work there, isn't it?
We don't think Hugo Banza was probably very nice, was he? Because he was a dictator, wasn't he?
Yeah, so." I'm not here to, you know, be pleased about anyone's death.
He's not featured on the podcast Real Dictators yet, so I don't know the details of his crimes, but I'm guessing he wasn't very nice.
So because Hugo Banza is dead, Mikey says he can give us more details himself. So as for more details on the story, this took place at the Virgin of Macarena Church in Santa Cruz, Bolivia. I was not afraid for my life. Banza was really short, barely over 5 foot tall.
Classic dictator.
Classic dictator.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't get on Inferno at Thorpe Park or whatever. You know what? I'm going to go and absolutely shizzle over press freedom. You let me on this bloody right. Yeah, that's the thing.
And the stern German priest, Father Carlos, later left the church and ran off to Germany with his Brazilian boyfriend.
Great.
Good on you, Father Carlos.
Well done, Carlos.
Nice.
If you would like more stories about my time growing up in Bolivia, here are some I'd be happy to tell. And he's given us a menu of 8 stories.
Oh, wow. Blimey.
Very good.
I mean, this guy needs to be doing a podcast, really,
rather than
us, with our meager anecdotes about, well, nothing, really.
This feels like he's done what they do at McDonald's now. He sort of touchscreened it. It's like, you select your anecdote.
Do you want to supersize this anecdote?
Do you want to supersize it? Do you want a side tangent? What side tangent would you like?
Would you like it with sauce?
Yes, please.
Here we go. These are the 8 stories we can ask for. Would you like 1... How I dodged the Bolivian military service by bribing a top official.
I mean, that's...
I like it, but it sounds like he's given the ending away within the title.
That's a mistake. That. That's why it's not called The Titanic That Sank. Yeah.
Story 2. How my grandfather helped organise the Banza coup in the 70s.
Whoa.
Blimey.
So maybe Mikey's more on the side of Hugo Banza than we thought.
Like Banza, he's obviously was very evil, I'm sure, as a dictator, wasn't he?
Probably not ideal, yeah.
Yeah, but somebody's name, it just sounds really fun, doesn't it? Hugo Banza.
Yeah.
It's a bit too close to Hugo Bonanza, isn't it?
It sounds like he should be the leader of a kind of sort of swing band or something like that.
Exactly. And introducing...
Hugo Banza and the Wide Leg Trouser Boys.
it's too close to Bonanza and too close to Banta, isn't it?
Mm.
Hugo Banza.
Yeah. Anyway. Story 3. Mm-hmm. The many times I was tear gassed.
I'm interested. It sounds quite heavy.
Sounds a bit heavy. The next one's my favourite one. Story 4. Being in a sauna with 5 Bolivian ex-presidents.
Oh my God, that anecdote has been supersized. How many ex-presidents do you want in this sauna? 5. Wow. Can you imagine being in a sauna with David Cameron... Liz Truss, Theresa May,
yeah,
John Major.
Who else?
Not having Blair or Brown.
Brown would be great value in a sauna.
Total comfort with his body. No trouble with nudity whatsoever. And hot.
At the first sign of anything being dropped on the floor, he'd be bending over to pick it up. It's like, no.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Again.
It's just natural.
Again, Gordon, no one's dropped anything. We don't have anything. We're in a sauna. I just can't be too safe.
Are you sure you didn't drop anything, Liz Truss?
You didn't drop maybe it was just a globule of sweat. I'll see if I can find it.
Uh-oh. Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Hey! Just because you're telling an anecdote about a helicopter, you don't have to helicopter it. You don't have to be doing the helicoptering every time. Oh,
and how are you doing Chinook? That's extraordinary.
Oh, that's John Major joining in.
Good on you, John. It's great when members of opposing parties can work together. Because this Chinook anecdote is a cross-party issue. And which of them is doing the smaller propeller? Well, that you had to be in the sauna to know that. That's the secret. It was John Major. No, actually, but, well, hard to say.
Carry on.
Okay.
So that's my favourite story of his. But there's amazing. Still four more to choose from.
Amazing.
Five, how my dog was stolen and how my dad and I stole him back.
Oh, wow. There's the ending there.
Oh, you think he's given away the...
But equally, I do want... Before it was it sounded too heart-rending, I don't think I could have coped, but now, to be fair to me, I can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do want to hear that.
All of these stories so far have been... feel like they are set against the backdrop of the history of Bolivian politics, of sort of 20th century Bolivian politics, right?
Yeah.
Except that last one. Is that just about a dog?
Depends who stole the dog.
Was it stolen by the regime?
Yeah.
I think it may have been. Okay, yeah.
Story six. The time I met a Mennonite who had fashioned his own metal teeth.
Okay.
Just we'll cover this pause while we Google. I'm Googling that.
I think a Mennonite is a kind of... it's like being Amish or one of those kind of...
Sect. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Christian sects.
Oh, they're the sect that you always come across in a zombie film.
Story seven. My experience going to a Bolivian circus where the main acts were a chicken and a goat.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, under normal circumstances, 100%, but it's got some stiff competition, that one. Yeah,
it really does, yeah.
Yep. Point eight, he says, there's a lot more, but I won't keep you reading. Thanks, Beans, Mikey. So ooh, he's bloody. Got even more stories in the locker.
I'd go for two or four, like his first choice, but that's tough.
For me, it's got to be being in a sauna with five Bolivian explosions.
Well, let's ask him. I mean, Henry, are you happy with that?
I'm happy. I mean, I'm
let's get the sauna anecdote. He's going to send that to us for the next time, is he?
Hopefully, yeah.
Brilliant.
If he's listening.
Let's get the sauna one. And let's keep this going as a thread until we lose interest.
Yeah? Until Mikey realises he could have launched a much more successful podcast on his own.
Similarly, if anyone else has ever been in a sauna with an ex-head of state,
yes,
do get
please.
In touch.
Or any foreign dignitaries if it's five or more, I suppose.
Yeah, need to up the ante.
Okay, now a couple of weeks ago, you remember we talked about cruises?
Yes.
Yep.
And we put out a call for people who'd worked on boats, and Henry was interested in how it is you become a captain of a cruise
structure.
Ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Will emails, Dear Beans, when I saw the title of this week's episode, Cruises, I was slightly trepidatious, as I thought I might need to send in a bollocking. My fears were worsened upon your request for maritime expertise from the listenership, given that I am a former navigational officer on a cruise ship.
What?
However, I am pleased to issue an anti-bollocking for the most accurate description of a cruise ship I've ever heard in the popular media. The piss sluicing, the beards, and the flirting on the captain's table were as if you'd been on the fly on the wall during my career at sea. I now work on land, setting the standards of training for seafarers, and the lack of knowledge around maritime careers is one of the biggest challenges we face.
Wow.
It's actually quite simple to become a captain. You apply to become a deck cadet with a shipping company, which could be a cruise or anything else in the Merchant Navy, and they pay for your training and pay while you train. You then progress through the ranks from officer of the watch to chief mate, and finally master or captain. It's a great way to start a career, as it has solid progression and you get no debt from university. Thanks for the help with the publicity.
Nice.
That's brilliant.
Well, maybe we'll inspire some seafarers. to go and sluice piss all over the world.
It's basically the same career progression and effectively the same job as working in a Pizza Hut. But you just have titles like Master of the Watch and Admiral of the High Seas.
Much better titles. I'm quite tempted. I have to be honest. I might not be here by this time next week. I quite fancy it.
You'll be the oldest deck cadet on the seven seas.
I could see Mike, though, very quickly rising up the ranks. I don't think Mike would trouble the decks for too long.
But going even further than ship captain and going up to Hugo Banda
ship dictator.
Admiral of the fleet with an armada of cruise ships at his command.
Yeah.
I've got to say, when he like sketched out the very obvious career progression through that, I just thought, I want a bit of that.
It does sound good, doesn't it?
Yeah. Given that we all live in a sort of career where there's no career progression.
There's no progression.
Sort of
things can go wrong at the turn of a hat.
It's pancake structured. So it's a gradual flattening and thinning, isn't it?
And a loss of a peelinning.
And a loss of a peelinning.
And if you're lucky, you get covered in Nutella.
Yeah.
But probably only once.
That's right. And sold for sort of £4.50 at a music festival.
Fed to a dog.
Patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thanks for everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/3beansalad. We make a monthly bonus episode that comes out at the end of every month. The only way to get that is to sign up. Also, you can get ad-free episodes. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a kind of slightly somber mood in the lounge, wasn't there?
Well, at times, yes. But that's because it was the...
It was the evening of remembrance for career opportunities that people turned down and regretted turning down eventually.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ben. You're quite right. So it was. And here's my report.
It was the evening of remembrance for career opportunities that people turned down and regretted turning down eventually at the Sean Bean Lounge last night. Given the ruing was off the charts, Sean Bean advised the loungers that however hard they rued, someone was ruing harder. Sure, Jacob Thorns passed on the chance to be a high-speed souffle chef on a Japanese bullet train, but Ashley Kate Wheeler ought by now to be NASA's number one podiatrist. Amy Barker turned her nose up at stress-testing electric guitars so 80s rock stars could be sure they'd pick the right one to smash on stage. Ethan Anderson could have been a professional long-term sleep study subject and not even had to change his own nappies. Patrick O'Connell ignored a tap on the shoulder and failed to become an Imperial military helmet designer, something he would have excelled at. As would Erin Baden-Smith as a getaway driver for a Belgian jewel thief if Erin had only said yes. David Payne turned down three dream jobs in the form of stand-in, stuntman and sex scene body double for a young Jesse Plemons. Paul Dunn would have been mortgage-free by now had he grasped the nettle and become an artificial insemination kit training day salesman. Maya Katunin's life as a lion tamer never panned out, and to this day, broadly speaking, lion tamers remain at best an unruly bunch. Alex King isn't a gecko doula, and Rosie Harding isn't a pianist specialising in the accompaniment of grade 4 flute candidates. Ryan Hammond isn't a badger cull ombudsman, and Dominic Newman isn't a feared and acclaimed erotic fiction critic. And Katie Wookie eschewed the role of Omni-Muse for all creative endeavours in the 2010s as it sounded insulting, but realised last night that, had she pursued it, Sean Bean never would have ended up voicing Corporal Hill in the movie Pixels. Bitter pills to swallow indeed, but we swallowed them together. Thanks all.
OK, that's the end of the show, but we will play out with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of the audience, the listening audience. Now, who shall we pick? By the way, I just want to let people know, I pick these at random. Sometimes people say, why didn't you pick mine? It's completely random.
So it may still be picked. It may be.
Exactly.
Eventually.
Anyone that's been sent in is still very much in the tombola. So this is from Daniel. He says, please find attached a short version of your theme played on a magic piano at a soft play I took my toddler to on holiday in Cornwall.
Thanks, Daniel.
So we'll play out with that. Thank you for listening and welcome to 2024.
Thank you. Bye.